Welcome back to the High Impact Physician Podcast. Today's episode, Sandy is talking with Dr. Brad Block, who is a head and neck surgeon, and he's on a mission to democratize soft skills to as many physicians as possible, and he's doing that through his podcast, The Physician's Guide to Doctoring. He's funny, he is charismatic, and he's got a lot to offer you on this episode, so let's go ahead and get into it.
Let's jump in maybe with kind of that meta question of having you tell us just a bit about you and how you got to where you are.
So I'm currently in my basement and I took the stairs. Sorry, bad joke. So I'm an otolaryngologist. So I'm an ear, nose, and throat doctor. I've been in practice for 9 years now. I'm a partner at ENT and Allergy Associates, which is the largest ENT practice in the country. We're actually five times bigger than the second biggest practice. I did my residency at Georgetown Medical School at SUNY Buffalo. And while I was in practice, I realized that there were certain aspects of the physician-patient relationship and physician-patient interaction that I could improve at. I didn't know how some of my partners were able to see many more patients per day than me without falling behind. So I thought there was something to be learned about interactions, engaging with people. In addition to the fact that I've always been kind of a wallflower, it might not seem that way on my show, but it's true. And whereas my wife like floats through a cocktail party and everybody leaves there thinking that they're her new best friend. You know, she just has this gift. And what I learned about those two things is these things can be learned. These things can be learned. But most of the learning, most of the teaching was being done for like dating. Most of these. So I thought, you know, I would love to get these experts in front of me to be able to talk to them about how physicians can improve their ability to interact with their patients using the same information, using the same research on nonverbal communication and charisma and, you know, all these things that are out there for executive leaders, for lawyers, for entrepreneurs. But nobody's really talking to doctors about that. You know, we have to memorize biochemistry that we never use. So I thought, what if I create my own podcast? Then I can get these experts in front of me and ask them the questions that I want.
I am just sitting here smiling. I'm having a flashback. So I think it was maybe 14, 15 years ago, and I was coaching my first surgeon, and I was so nervous. I was like so stressed. I just wanted to like cancel at the last minute and say, never mind. And I remember one of the opening questions I asked was, what is it that you want me to know about you? And he said something you just sparked in my mind. He said, you know, I went to medical school residency. I did my fellowships, but the whole time I was underground learning technical stuff. My buddies were out dating. That's what he said. They were out telling jokes, hanging bowling alleys, drinking. He said they learned skills I didn't learn. And he said, I popped out at the age of like 35, you know, and here I am in practice. And I have not had a place to learn skills to just do whatever this is that other people can do so naturally. And I just had a flashback when you said that because he used that same kind of parallel.
Well, it's practice. It's practice. It's learned behavior, right? And I can see that with my kids. Like one of them is a little funnier than the other. And so what happened is that behavior gets reinforced and he tries things and he's more adventurous about things that he tries in order to make people laugh. And so he's going to hone his shtick without even realizing that that's what he's doing.
I love that. Hone his
And
shtick.
I can keep that anonymous because I have three boys. So when I say he, you don't know who I'm talking about.
Oh, that's so good. All right. Well, let's jump in then. So I suspect there's a number of physicians that have great ideas to start entrepreneurial things, maybe start a podcast. What was the hardest part for you in moving from this idea of having a podcast to making it happen?
So every podcaster will tell you the same thing. Starting, you know, you think it's about, oh, what gear do I get? What, you know, a lot of that is just, it's analysis paralysis. And as physicians, you know, we like to make the best decision. But when you're starting a podcast, there are a million microphones out there. There are a million podcast recording services. There's no need to reinvent the wheel, but that's what I tried to do. So even just recording my first episode, it started out, my podcast actually started out, I was going to write a book. I wasn't going to create a podcast. I was going to write a book because there was all this information out there and I was going to consolidate it into a book, but I never started. So then I thought, you know what? A blog, then I'll just do it piecemeal and maybe eventually I'll create it into a book, but I never wrote a thing. not a single thing. So then I decided, well, podcast, because then, you know, I could just put out one episode at a time and, you know, have to do some research for each episode. That's ultimately, you know, being a podcast consumer, avid podcast consumer, I thought that that would be the best medium for me because, you know, it turned into the medium that that I knew and that I was most comfortable with. So even just creating the first one, and if anyone's considering starting a podcast, just find out the minimum you need to do to create your first episode and then create your first episode with someone you know. My first three episodes were with my friends because after finishing medical school, and I think this is where a lot of physicians might have some imposter syndrome, you need to realize that in order to get where you are as a physician, you are surrounded by experts. Those people that you went to undergrad with and were friends with were probably at the top of their class like you. High school, top of their class like you. Medical school, successful, right? You're surrounded by experts. You've been surrounded by people your entire life who are now experts in whatever they do. So I reached out to a couple of friends. My brother has a PhD in health policy economics. So I did an episode with him. And then one of my friends is a program director of gastroenterology at University of Rochester. So I did an episode with her. And so, you know, I just got a couple of my friends that I knew were experts and had questions, had answers to questions that I knew I had. And so I reached out to them. And the imposter syndrome comes in like, right, so I'm not the preeminent otolaryngologist, right? I'm not the Anthony Fauci of otolaryngology, right? I'm not, I can't lecture internationally on it. Doesn't make me not expert in it. So I can still give talks on it. I can still give lectures on it. And so, you know, one thing that we need to realize is that we are experts in our fields. And so what I'm trying to be an expert on is the soft skills. And that's where the podcast comes in. And I'm certainly getting better at it. So, yeah, so that was it for the podcast. Just figure out a way to just start. What is the minimum you need to record an episode and just do it? And then you can evolve from there. But just that it's going to take you forever to figure out how to record the perfect episode.
It's so good. I love your vulnerability of, I started with a book, then I moved to a blog, and I love your transparency of just start with someone you know. Just your ideas just make it so practical. So let's go down that lane. So you've been doing some podcasts, really successful. I highly recommend your podcast. It's so fun to listen to.
Well, thank you.
Let me ask you now, as you look back, absolutely, on your journey, what are two or three things that you're discovering about yourself as a physician leader?
Yeah, physician leader, that's actually not something I really see myself as. I guess in having the podcast, I am, but I've never really, I don't see myself as the leader so much as the facilitator, right? So on my show, I don't claim to be an expert in anything except for ears, noses, and throats. And so I have experts on my show, and all I am is curious. And I think that's the key. Like, I have all of these questions for all of these experts, like you, because we're gonna be switching roles after this. And I have all these questions for you. And I think that's something that I've discovered about myself as a leader, is that I guess it's, you have to be curious about everything. And if you are, if you're curious enough, if you're interested, and I've heard this before, it's definitely not my quote, but in order to be interesting, you have to be interested. And I think that's been the key to being an effective podcaster, is I'm genuinely interested in the people that are on my show, which is, you know, sometimes people are approaching me about ideas that are very good, but they don't necessarily apply to my life. And I can't really feel comfortable having them on the show because I'm just not personally interested in them.
I find this really interesting, just this notion of physician leadership, because for me, one of the things I see that blocks physicians from being really great leaders is they can get kind of stuck in this notion of what it is and what it isn't, and can really want to be an expert in something, almost like want to be able to diagnose leadership problems and fix them. And I will tell you, in listening to your podcasts, one of my observations is that leadership has so much more to do with ask rather than tell, focus on, you know, what could be, focus on what's possible, just not what's probable. And so I find it interesting how I purposely asked you about physician leader because I didn't know how you'd react, but now I know a bit more about how you see yourself.
You know, I had Jack Cochran, who is the executive director of the Permanente, you know, the Kaiser Permanente Federation, on my show, and he had written a book about leadership. And one thing that he had said was form coalitions in order to lead.
Yes.
So, and primarily listen, find out what others want, and then use the common ground to reach a goal, which is what you're saying. Don't lead by dictating what needs to happen, but rather listen. And I think finding those commonalities, like I know, you know, there's someone in my neighborhood, not a physician, but he's one of the connectors of the neighborhood. So him and his wife are just, they're like the center of the wheel that all of the spokes come off of. Like they connected almost everybody in the neighborhood. And it's really incredible, even without doing like anything for leadership. But, you know, if you were to say, you know, who's in charge here? I think a lot of people would look to them because that's what they do. They connect people. They don't tell us what to do or how to live and how to, you know, hang out and socialize. They connect. So I totally agree with that.
Yeah, connections are a really big part of it. And there are so many practical ways to do that. And I would say your podcast is one of it. The way you bring people together, listen for commonalities, and then you're distributing that content in a way that people can connect with it. Yeah, it's a very powerful tool that you're using. Okay, so let's jump in. I actually came up with four topics that I'm pretty interested in. And I'd love to dive into them both from the perspective of, do you have a podcast that could address this? And then maybe any personal experience or challenges you've had on the topic, maybe challenges you've seen other physicians have on the topic, and then just a bit about what solution you walked away with or how you might tweet that out. So I want to go through kind of a rapid iteration of the same questions on a couple different topics, and we'll just sort of see how this unfolds. So the first one you've actually already started to address, this whole notion of interpersonal skills. So give us a snapshot of one or a couple of podcasts that you would recommend around interpersonal communication skills.
So this was one of the reasons I even started the podcast, right? Because I wanted to work on my interpersonal skills. I wanted to improve my interpersonal skills with my patients. And as it turns out, those skills work in the rest of life too. So I think if you're someone who's good at communicating with your patients, you're going to be someone who's good at communicating in the boardroom. And it translates from there. So these couple of episodes, one of them was season one, episode 15 was Bad Words with Stephanie Sogg, who is a psychologist at the Harvard Weight Center. And it's interesting how this was one of my favorite podcast stories, which is, you know, season one, episode 15. So my 15th episode, and I hadn't even had that many episodes that I had published yet before I reached out to her. There was an article in, I think, the Huffington Post that talked about how poorly physicians are about discussing weight with their patients. It's such a hot button. It's such a sensitive, emotionally charged issue. And it had a bunch of examples of patients that had just been really not treated well by their physicians. So my question was, well, if this is how not to talk to your patient about their weight, how should we do it? So I emailed her and I said, I have a podcast for physicians. Here it is. And she said, oh, I love podcasts. I listen to them all the time. I've never been on one. Thanks so much for inviting me. She's an international speaker. She had a great article called Bad Words. And that's what we called the episode. And what it describes is how words shape our thoughts. So our thoughts shape our words, certainly, but our words can shape our thoughts and can shape the thoughts of others. So when you're describing a patient, you should use non-judgmental words, right? When you're describing them to themselves, if you frame it in such a way that's sensitive, then they'll probably think better of themselves after the visit. If you describe it to your colleagues in such a way, they're likely to view it in a less judgmental way because of the words that you've chosen. So it's very important, you know, and I can't elaborate on it that much because, you know, I think just listen to the episode. You know, we'd be here forever if we went in depth about each individual episode. But if that's not a good reason to start a podcast, I don't know what is. So that was my first real huge win with the podcast because, man, I just emailed her and she emailed me back and then we got her on the show and it's still one of my favorite episodes. I'm now at probably episode 100 by now. So another one was Scott Dickers, who founded The Onion. The Onion, the newspaper that I used to read in college and became a super successful website. Yes, the comedy website, The Onion. I got the founder on the show to talk about how to be funny. So we talked about how to be funny in the exam room. And he said something that was, I think, a good rule to live by for physicians, which is the goal of humor is to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted. So the patient is never, ever, ever the butt of the joke, because obviously they're the ones who's afflicted. So you have to figure out who is comfortable and who is afflicted, and it is okay to afflict the comfortable. And in most situations, the doctor is the comfortable one, or the hospital system, or the pharmaceutical company, or, you know, you certainly don't want to undermine trust, but if you're comforting the afflicted, then it should be fair game. So I thought that was a great rule to live by.
These are definitely things people don't learn in medical school. I'm loving the example so far. Go for another one.
No, there was no lecture in medical school on how to be funny. definitely. He also has on his website comedy tropes that are not to be used by comedians, but they can absolutely, I think you need to register for his website and give them your email address. But he gives these, like, and it's constantly growing, this list of comedy tropes that comedians can't use. They can't use because it's too easy. But doctors, yeah, we can use them. You want to refer to the internet as the interwebs for an easy chuckle? Sure. So he's got a huge list that you can use. And it's a great tool to use in the exam room with your patients as well, as long as you can use it well. But if you want to save yourself from a bad joke, a good way is to turn it around and say, well, I'm glad I'm in medicine and I'm not in comedy. So again, afflicting the comfortable and in order to comfort the afflicted. Another one was Jonathan Winkle, who is a med-peds physician, and he wrote a book called Healing People, Not Patients. And, you know, his book, it was all about how important it is to get to know your patients outside of their ailments in order to really be able to help them. So you're healing them as people, not as patients. So, you know, in his entire book, it was great examples of why that's true. But in the reality, the situation is our time is limited, right? We don't have that much time to sit there right. And get to know. This isn't a date, right? Where, you know what? It went well with drinks, so let's move on to dinner, right? it's not a date. You have a bunch of people in the waiting room. You have a bunch of people calling to be added on. Like, we have a finite period of time. So as much as we'd want to take the best care of each individual patient, we can't do it to the detriment of every patient that comes after. So what I did is I challenged him and I said, but what can we do to keep things efficient? What can we do to do this in a reasonable way? And he said, this is the question that he gets all of the time. And so he had a couple of good tools for that. One was setting an agenda at the onset of the visit. So at the beginning of the visit, make sure that they know that there are a couple things that you're going to be addressing today, and you can't address every single thing. So set expectations early, and it helps to include them in the decision-making because it's not all about you, the doctor, and what you want. So make sure that you're addressing the things that they get a say in the agenda. And also, you want to mirror them in terms of their language. So basically using words that they use so they know that you're listening. So, you know, not just parroting back to them exactly, but if you use different words, then they might think that you're not quite listening and not quite understanding. So using the same words. And then the last thing that I thought was really useful was recognizing the importance of cultural humility. And that's actually come up a couple of times since then in my life, not cultural competency, recognizing you don't know what you don't know, and you will likely never know. Even within your culture, your own culture, there are subcultures. So recognizing what you don't know, cultural humility and not cultural competency, because, you know, you're not going to, unless it's in your own household, you're not going to achieve cultural competency. And the last one was someone that I had heard on another podcast. That's how I found him, was the podcast that I first listened to that helped me or persuaded me to make my own podcast. His name is Blake Eastman. This is season 3, episode 30. And on nonverbal communication. So he's an expert in nonverbal communication. He's a poker player, but he also has a master's degree in this. And he's consulted with physician practices and hospital systems in the past regarding nonverbal communication. So it's not like I had the brilliant idea to have him on my show because, you know, he's an expert in this and let's take him in a space that he's never been before. No, he's lived in this space. He actually conducts scientific studies on nonverbal communication. And he said something that I thought was extremely concise, and that is physicians should convey interest and authority. And interest is conveyed through facial expression. mostly around the eyes, and authority is conveyed in vocal tonality. So as a physician, when you're seeing a patient, they need to know that you're interested in them and that you know what's going on. So you need to convey interest and authority. So when they're talking, you need to make eye contact and your face needs to move, even the part that's behind the mask now, but really mostly around the eyes. So the fact that we're behind a mask is not as detrimental as you might think. So make sure you're not just nodding up and down. Use your eyes to express that you're actually interested in what they're talking about and convey your authority in your vocal tonality.
Okay, I'm seeing a father-son relationship here. You talked about your son is honing his shtick. You are so totally kicking butt here in terms of distilling really great knowledge, some really great gems here. So if you were to wrap
I love this stuff. I love it. I love it. That's why this is just so interesting for me, even though I have no, I guess my undergrad degree, which I don't remember anything from, was kind of loosely associated with this type of stuff. But I just find this stuff so interesting and so critical. Like if I'm, you know, the way I see it, schools are going to teach my kids math and reading and social studies, but they're not going to teach the soft skills. So the more stuff that I can of this type of thing that I can pass on to them, then the more prepared they're going to be to face any challenges that they get to in the world.
Okay. I see one of my challenges on this podcast is by the end to ask if you might consider yourself a thought leader or physician leader, and if you might reconsider from where we started, because I'm definitely sensing this way that you bring together other thought leaders. You're serving as the center of the wheel to really help others generate new insights. This is so fun. But let's pause here to wrap up the interpersonal communication skills. So you've talked about comedy, setting the agenda, conveying interest, all kinds of really good stuff. How would you wrap this up in terms of your own tweet or your own thoughts around interpersonal communication?
I would say, you know, looking at Carol Dweck, the name of her book is Mindset. Her book is called Mindset, and it's about having a growth mindset. And so for interpersonal communication, right, the thought is, it's popular wisdom is that interpersonal communication skills are fixed. You either have them or you don't. You're either awkward or you're smooth. And it's all of this, like you can hear from what I talked about, this can be learned. Certainly some people are going to start the race ahead because they've been like the surgeon that you were referring to, his friends are going to be better at interpersonal communication. Why? Because they've been practicing for years when they were socializing and he was stuck in the operating room suturing. Some people are, but there's no reason to not start now to develop your interpersonal communication skills because this can be learned and this can be improved upon. And if you look at any of my examples, these are all things that you can start applying tomorrow.
Yes. Yes. Love it. This can be learned and this can be applied tomorrow. Love it. Great tagline. Okay. Let's move to another topic. I love chatting about. Actually, I love hearing what people's ideas are. This whole theme of life hacks. So as you think about life hacks, things people have done to increase their energy or just general life happiness, joy, meaning, all the good stuff, what podcasts would you recommend on this topic?
So both of them are season three. So one of them is season three, episode six, which is Private Practice Matters with Phil Boucher. Phil's a pediatrician in Lincoln, Nebraska, who he's really a thought leader in the physician online community about how to suck the marrow out of life, how to practice most efficiently, how to make your life and practice as efficient as possible. You know, he has five kids. I think he just bought a huge bit of farmland or something, because you can't do that where I am on Long Island, but you can do it in Lincoln, Nebraska. And he's got two different podcasts. I don't know how he does it, but he does it because he does it efficiently. So we went through, you know, basically how his day is and how he maximizes efficiency out of each day. And the other one was another huge podcast win for me. This was season three, episodes 38 and 39. This was with BJ Fogg, who's a PhD out of Stanford, who wrote a book, Tiny Habits. Now, I've heard of him for many, many years, and I never thought that I would actually have a conversation with him. But I emailed him, and he emailed me back, and he agreed to be on the show, even though he's been on shows that literally get 1,000 times more downloads than mine. He was willing to go on my show. Why was he willing to go on my show? Because physicians are such an important audience to him. Because if you think of an influencer who has, you know, tons of people on their Instagram page or their LinkedIn profile, well, as physicians, how many patient visits do we get a year, right? We're influencers. Every single day of our lives, we're influencers. So that's why it was important to him that he be on my show, even though my audience is relatively small. And so why would a PhD, so he's a behavioral scientist, why would that be a life hack? Well, as it turns out, the science of behavior change, most of what we think we know is wrong, right? You see these people on the cover of People magazine that have lost a bunch of weight and are running marathons after, you know, being severely, extremely overweight. And they just, one day, they just decided to change their life. One day, they were just going to change everything. And they did. And yet the rest of us think about it, try it, and then fail and feel like we're horrible human beings for it. And his research really points to the fact that that's not how you successfully change. You successfully change through small, easily reproducible habits. Your motivation is going to wane so that whatever the habit needs to be, it needs to be so easy to do and so programmed into your day that of course you're going to do it. And then once you do it, you're going to realize that you've been successful. And that can snowball into more habits. The book is actually called Tiny Habits, The Small Changes That Change Everything. So these are the things. And the other thing is celebrating your wins. He coined this term called shine. I mean, it was already a word, but he's using it in a different context where you actually want to celebrate when you do something that you've been meaning to do, right? A tiny habit of maybe having a bag of carrots as a snack. You do a little celebration, whatever that is to you, fist pump, little dance, playing your favorite song in your head, celebration. And that helps to program it in because we change by being successful and we change by being happy and doing the things that we want to do. So, this is clearly I'm an evangelist of his, but this is what we need to be telling our patients. If we want our patients to change, and they're extremely vulnerable when they're with us in the office, right? We're an authority. We're someone that's respected. We're probably talking about something that they're not so sure about. And that makes them, and he actually mentioned this in the podcast, in the second episode, this makes them extremely vulnerable. So it's important that we use the time that we have with them in as constructive a way. So we want to be positive and we want to help them to make successful changes that they can actually execute. And once they see that they can be successful with one thing, then it's going to open the door to being successful with other things. So that was a bit of my soapbox. Sorry.
Okay, I'm sitting here smiling because as you talk about applying these in the physician-patient relationship, what I'm visualizing is how you've personally been also applying these in the physician leadership realm. So you've been making these tiny, these small, easy habits in terms of bringing on guests, building your own skills, celebrating and programming in these successes as you're going along. So I'm just going to plant another seed around this is one of the paths of great clinicians becoming great physician leaders. They do things that they want to do and they have great success. So I'm just planting another seed about what physician leadership can look like and feel like. That was my little soapbox. So thank you. Okay. Give us an inside scoop in terms of life hacks. Tell us something that used to drain your energy or waste your time and a tip you took away from either of these seasons that you actually applied and it made a difference in your life.
I don't know if it can necessarily be in my career, in, you know, in being a physician.
Right.
But life. There is something that life. So I can't touch my toes. Exercising has never been a problem for me. I've always been motivated to exercise. Stretching has been a problem. And now I'm in my 40s and I get on the ground with my kids and things hurt. So I need to be a little more limber. And so I've always tried to get myself to stretch, but I never actually do it. And so one of his tips, we talked about celebration and how it helps to encode a new habit. And that's that feeling of shine, that feeling of pride. And I'm not much of a fist bumper, right? I'm not the type of person to stand up and do a dance, right? I'm that wallflower. So I asked him, what is it that I could do? Because I'm never going to do something like that. He said, fine, then think of something. Think of the thing that motivates you to do it. Think of how you're going to feel afterwards. Think of something positive that goes along with it. And so what gets me to do it is the thing that makes me want to do it to begin with, which is rolling around with my kids on the floor without having pain. And so after I stretch every time, I think of myself rolling around, you know, wrestling with my kids on the ground, and it gets me to continue doing it. It has helped to encode the habit. Do I do it every single night? So I generally do it before bed. Do I do it every single night? No, but my frequency is definitely much, much higher than it was before I had included that bit of encoding.
Okay, I'm getting a visual. You're going to be one of those like 100-year-old Olympians where the Olympic events are doing things with grandkids and like things in life that matter, but they're considered like Olympian events. So rolling around on the floor with kids and getting up and running to do something outside. I'm getting a visual of you like leading that out in 60 years from now.
God willing, God willing.
Yeah, God willing, right? Yeah, awesome. Okay, next topic. So one of the things I notice is how many incredibly great clinicians are out there. Though it's a whole new territory to start building those skills of like building their team, setting a vision, managing conflict with their teams. So let's take on the theme of leading others, any dimension you want to go. But talk to us about a podcast you'd recommend for people that want to gather tips to lead others.
So that one I had mentioned earlier, that's season 2, episode 10, where I speak to Jack Cochran, the former executive director of the Permanente Federation. He had written this book, Healer, Leader, Partner. And one way that I challenged him was, you know, he kept on saying how important it is for physicians to be leaders. And you know what? When I get home from work, I'm tired. I want to see my kids. And then, you know, I'll eat dinner with my, we'll put the kids to bed, eat dinner with my wife. Maybe I'll do a little more work. And then we go to bed. Or, you know, maybe I'll watch a little TV with her and then we'll go to bed. And then I wake up with the kids in the morning, you know, get them ready, and then I go to work, and then I do the same thing all over again. So when in my day am I going to incorporate being a leader? When is that going to happen? And his answer is, if you're not going to do it, someone else is going to do it. And it's not going to be someone with your same interests in mind, right? So that's why it's important for us to be, for physicians to be leader in our space, because nobody knows the space better than us. And if we continue deferring to executives who claim to be expert, then we're going to continue suffering the same fate that we've been suffering of, you know, increased duties, increased administrative burdens, increased clicking, decreased fulfillment, increased burnout, decreased compensation, all of these things that we complain about, but never actually do anything about. You want to stop complaining and do something about it. So we have to find the time. We have to make the sacrifice. And if it means, you know, less time with my kids, then that's what it has to mean in order for me to be a leader. That being said, completely hypocritical, because aside from my podcast, I'm not really in any leadership roles. So, you know, I'm not on the board of my hospital. And even in my own practice, I had been in a couple of leadership positions, and I recently stopped doing those for reasons that I don't care to share at the moment. But I will take up that mantle again at some point.
Well, and I'm going to make a little plug here that when I ask people to reflect on who's been most influential in their life or who are some of the people that have personally impacted them, sometimes they're people that had formal titles and roles and responsibilities. And often there are people that did not have formal titles. So I really come from the perspective that leadership shows up in lots of formal, informal ways and a whole bunch in between. It really has more to do with how we influence and touch one another's lives. So that can come with a formal title, and it often comes without that. So I'm just going to plant that seed again.
Finding mentors. I think mentors don't necessarily have to be people that you directly interact with. They can just be, I guess it's more of a role model, but still.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so if you were to wrap up your recommendation of the podcast on leading others, what was your takeaway? If you were to sum up your takeaway from that podcast, what would you say?
So it was, we had talked about it in the intro of the episode. It's forming coalitions to lead. So listen, if you're going to lead by listening, lead by being humble, lead by recognizing any mistakes that you've made, and then finding out from those that you're working with what you can do to correct those mistakes, find out what they want, and use that common ground to reach the common goal. So leading isn't isn't about telling people what to do. It's about finding out what they want to do, what they want done, and then using that commonality to accomplish your goal. And actually, something else that I recognize about leading others, I didn't learn from that podcast episode. I learned it from one of your podcast episodes, which was just the simple act of engaging with others in what may seem like a mundane conversation can help you to lead them. When you're walking through the halls as a physician, you've got your list of things to do in a particular order because you've triaged it and you need to get this done. This is what we did as residents and this is what we do as attendings. And chatting with people in the hall is not on that list. But chatting with people in the hall is going to make you more acquainted with them. It's going to make them more comfortable with you. And it's going to make you more able to lead them because you understand each other. So that time that you're chatting is not time wasted. It's time building a relationship. I don't remember which episode that was, but I heard it and it completely flipped my perspective because I'm a make a list and get it done kind of person and no small talk, you know, get your business taken care of. And that really taught me that that's the small talk is part of the business.
So good. So good. Well, and I know for anyone interested, IDEO has some really practical, tactical steps around design thinking, because I know physicians love a checklist or like help make it concrete. And so I love the way you talked about listening, forming coalitions, recognizing mistakes, finding what they want. Design thinking has a similar kind of model, which is around really like gathering insights from your key people, build some kind of scrappy prototype, like try something out with them, get feedback, and we'll go through rapid iterations rather than like sitting in an office with a whiteboard trying to figure it out ourselves. So I love the way you talk about it. It's all about interaction, relationships, and really driving results together. So good. Awesome. Okay, fourth topic. I wasn't sure how to frame this or name this, so I'm just going to call it the elephant in the room. And I know for a fact there are lots of things that go unspoken in physician culture, primarily because people are trained to not talk about things, you know, just sort of handle it, get it done right, get it done the first time, don't show any weakness. When you think about topics that you've had or conversations that maybe are traditionally left kind of silent, people don't talk about it, but you brought a guest on to talk about something that's often unspoken, what podcast would you recommend?
So one thing that's unspoken that shouldn't be unspoken in medicine is money. Although that's not the one that I'm going to develop currently. Just that's something that we never talk about and we should talk about, but there are plenty of physician finance personal finance physician podcasters out there that know this space much better than me. But still, that certainly applies. That's the elephant in the room that none of us talk about, but we really should. But really, it's adverse outcomes in litigation. Adverse outcomes in litigation. We never talk about this in medical school or residency, but if you practice long enough, there's a saying among surgeons that if you don't have surgery, you will have complications. There's a saying among ear, nose, and throat doctors, if you don't have a post-tonsillectomy bleed, you're not taking out enough tonsils. And the reason is because the rate of post-tonsillectomy bleed in adults is 1 in 20. So it's pretty high. So you will have adverse outcomes, and most of us will be involved in litigation. If we're not the primary person in the case, then we'll be named in the case. And the likelihood that you will not go from training to retirement unscathed. Very few people make it the entire way unscathed. So what they should be telling us is you will be sued. Be prepared for it. It will happen. Because most of us think, well, I'm going to be that doctor who communicates with his or her patients so well that they never sue me. And fine. Communication is key to decreasing your risk. Just like wearing a mask and washing your hands is important to decreasing your risk of getting COVID. But it doesn't eliminate your risk. So communicating well does not eliminate your risk. So it's important that we do talk more about adverse outcomes in litigation. So those are both in season 3, those episodes 2 and 3. It's with Stacia Derman. I think her website is Thrive Physician. She experienced an adverse outcome as an emergency medicine doctor in a pediatric hospital. And it was devastating. It was devastating for her. So we talk about how she continued practicing. Because if something like that happens to one of your patients, it's really hard to continue doing what you're doing. And episodes, season three, episodes 40 and 41 is with Dr. Keita Pensa. Her podcast is actually called Doctors in Litigation, the L Word, which should be mandatory listening for every physician out there. It really does an extremely good job dissecting what happens in a lawsuit from being served, from having an adverse outcome to being served to the end of the case. So, you know, so I interviewed her, which we kind of hit the highlights of her entire podcast of what it's like to be sued. Her for one of her adverse outcomes, her case lasted 10 years, which is just unbelievable. Unbelievable to me that this can last so long, but it does.
Wow. That kind of takes my breath away to think of 10 years and how disruptive that would be to life and just on all fronts, how disruptive that would be. That would be hard.
Yeah. Actually, in one of your episodes, you had a neurosurgeon who discussed an adverse outcome that he had and that he ended up speaking with the family. And that was something that helped him heal. But that conversation could have gone very differently. You know, the family member could have avoided his gaze, walked right past him, and next thing you know, he's being served with papers and he feels responsible. He feels guilty for what happened. And the plaintiff attorney is going to weaponize that against you in that circumstance. They're going to make you relive that as many times as you can. They're going to make you feel insecure. They're going to make you feel shame. And they're going to do that because they know they can. But for them, it's a business. For them, it's not about justice. For them, it's about business. It's about getting the biggest settlement that they can. And so they're going to use your own emotions and your own vulnerability against you in order to get the case to go the way they want it to go.
Well, that explains why it's been an elephant in the room. My heart is starting to race just listening to you. And it also explains about the power of, I love that podcast about the L word and how we don't have to keep doing it that way. I'm so glad you brought that topic up. And I'm so glad you have a recommendation of some episodes to listen to. Thank you.
That's why we need more physician leaders.
Okay, here we go.
We need more physician leaders because it's going to keep going in that. If it's going to change, the only way that it's going to change is with more physicians in leadership positions, right? More physicians in government, more physicians who go back and get their JD. So, you know, it's just a great example of why we need to be involved in this decision-making. Because if we're not, then the broken system is just going to continue.
It's a great point and definitely something we have in common about what the world needs more of. Excellent. So let's go ahead and maybe wrap this up. What closing thoughts would you like to share with our listeners?
It's important to recognize that the continued learning that you do in medicine is not just about your specialty. It's about your specialty. It's about other specialties. But there's a lot of new information out there and it keeps on evolving. And it's about all aspects of medical care, from how the patient's treated by your staff when they walk in the office. How you treat the staff affects how the patients are treated, which also impacts your satisfaction with how your day went. And so all of this is not something, these are not things that are taught in medical school, but the information is out there. So I'm doing my best to get that information in an easily digestible form in podcast, but mine is obviously not the only resource for this type of thing. So I think it's important to identify what your own limitations are, what you're not good at, what your pain points are, and find some resources that can help you with that because you can improve them. You can improve them. You know, I keep calling myself the wallflower and in a lot of social situations, I still am. I'm not really that outgoing in engaging with other people. It's fine when I'm sitting on my computer in my basement by a microphone, talking about myself, everybody's favorite subject, like Dale Carnegie says. But you know, I'm working on improving my ability to interact with my patients. And that has been reflected in my bottom line, right? I am more successful as a physician. I'm busier as a physician because I work on those things. And the patients see it and the patients appreciate it. And they communicate that to other patients, which makes me busier. So it's not just all about tying knots and suturing and making sure you're up to date on your clinical practice guidelines. It's also about making sure that you're the best physician you can be in the exam room, in your office, in your community, and I'll keep trying to make content that can help you do that.
So good. I really appreciate your vulnerability, your transparency, these great practical tips. I really appreciate calling out the specific episodes. I'm just really struck by your own awareness of who you are and how you're serving. I'm really struck by your adaptability, your empathy, and really your awareness organizationally across the industry and what the opportunities are for physicians. I have to close out by saying I have a new metaphor for you. I get that you're really attached to the wallflower, so I don't want to take that away from you. Here's what I see is a wallflower that's, I think they call them holograms. They're kind of, they can be three-dimensional. So I imagine as you continue to podcast with people and learn and grow and stretch, there's a part of you that's watering that wallflower in a way that's breathing life and coming to life in some new kind of futuristic ways that you never considered.
Oh, that's beautiful. I really appreciate that.
I'm going to look up hologram to make sure I'm using it the right way, but I've got the visual in my head.
No, I think so. I think it's like a it's like instead of being stuck to the wall, I'm coming off the wall.
Yes. And I don't want to take away how you see yourself. I just want to grow from that and stretch from that. So I so appreciate this opportunity to talk through your different podcast episodes. Thanks for bringing the gems and recommending some of those specifically. Let's wrap up with how people can get a hold of you.
So my website is physiciansguidetodoctoring.com. You can find links to a bunch of different podcast platforms. If you just look up Physician's Guide to Doctoring on your podcast platforms, it'll be there. You can follow me on Twitter at Physicians Guide. Most of what I tweet is specifically just my podcast episodes. I just want a podcast. Part of the problem with podcasting is all this effort that you have to put into marketing it in order to get more ears. You know, I'm on Twitter in order to do that, but it's really just to get people to listen. But also I've connected with a lot of people that have then become guests on my show. So yeah, physiciansguidetodoctoring.com or at physiciansguide on Twitter. I'm not on Instagram or Etsy or Pinterest or TikTok or any of those yet, but I guess we'll see.
I suspect your vulnerability, transparency, your courage, and your practicality is going to take you far. I've learned a lot today. Thank you so much for your time, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.